The Crude Life with Jason Spies.
Mike Curran, Abnova Ecological Solutions.
All right, let's talk a little bit about ecological solutions in oil and gas and energy. How is it that, you know, with the Crude Life, we'll start there. With the Crude Life, how is it that your company is involved with oil and gas? But first, you know, you better at least give an overview of what your company does. More of the elevator pitch. We'll get into some of the specifics as the interview goes. But describe your company and how it interrelates with oil and gas.
Yeah, so Abnova Ecological Solutions is a general ecology solution company. I focus mainly on reclamation and restoration and a lot of habitat conservation and things like that. We have a broad background in anything from data management, geographic information science services to real ecological science. I do most of the operations and have a PhD in ecology from the University of Wyoming. During my time there, I worked with 26 oil and gas companies to develop a large database system, tracking reclamation and restoration efforts, things like seed mixes, herbicide applications, and so on and so forth, as well as their outcomes. With that, I've pioneered several techniques to monitor reclaimed sites using cell phones or handheld cameras, using drones, all interrelated with mapping tools. And then one of the other things I specialize in is developing seed mixes and soil amendments, reclamation plans. More recently I've gotten into just tracking how ecosystem services respond to these efforts. And I think there's definitely a lot of benefit that these oil and gas companies can have when they're doing really large reclamation jobs.
What are some of the things that you saw positive come out of this?
Yeah, so two of the recent studies that we published in 2022 were related to how insects respond to oil and gas development and subsequent reclamation. We were utilizing seed mixes with an early cereal species called Rocky Mountain bee plant. That's a native annual flower that typically, because companies haven't gotten bond release from using annual species, they don't use them. What we found with that species specifically is it does a really good job at competing with the invasive and noxious weeds in Wyoming. So actually companies, by utilizing that species, are going to be saving money in their reclamation plan by reducing herbicide costs and so on and so forth. It really started being used as that. So there's that whole major benefit. It competes with noxious and invasive weeds. It grows taller than the native sagebrush, so it'll retain moisture in the first year or two, provide evapotranspiration benefits and shade benefits for other later cereal species, so all the perennial stuff in those seed mixes, to kind of come in and 2 or 3 years after initial seeding, while that native plant drops out of the mix. Within, you know, maybe 5 to 7 years, we're actually starting to see soil carbon be at the same levels or higher than what it was previously or compared to adjacent reference systems. So there's all those benefits. And then I really wanted to look at what's going on with the insect world. And the reason for that is insects are, part of the animal kingdom, and they are wildlife, but really insects provide more ecosystem services than any other form of wildlife. They're the foundation for terrestrial food webs, with 96% or more of terrestrial bird species utilizing insects as their primary source of protein, especially at the chick stage. Insects also provide the vast majority of pollinator services on Earth. And that's definitely one of the most important parts of a restoration or a reclamation program, is bringing pollinators in that can help with reproduction of the plants that you just seeded, so they can set seed and you can have kind of a self-perpetuating community. And then they do a whole bunch of other things like they're, you know, obviously a huge source of biodiversity. They do a lot for nutrient cycling, biocontrol, and things of that sort. So in this instance, and it's pretty common to actually use insects as indicators of ecosystem functionality in both aquatic and terrestrial systems. But yeah, in this instance, if we were looking at insect biodiversity, insect abundance, looks as though these reclaimed well pad locations are very much so higher functioning ecosystems than what they were before or what the surrounding vegetation communities are.
Now, when we're talking about, you know, some of the things that they can improve, some of the things that you may have noticed that you're going to be working on or are currently working on when it comes to reclamation, we're talking about being proactive here. What areas of proactiveness or in a proactive nature are you seeing that either your company can bring to the table, or, you know, maybe it's a different company. Maybe it's, you know, something in, you know, outside of the seed in ecological, maybe it's something in the IT world that can be brought into the fold. What are you seeing in terms of being proactive, or the industry could be more proactive, because this is an area that it never seems that you can be proactive enough.
Yeah. So a lot of this comes from the planning stages. And I think companies are getting a lot more proactive in where they're siting their disturbances. So where they're placing their well pads, how they're routing their pipelines. There's been a ton of work there. A lot of that comes down to simple GIS exercises my company could definitely help with. A lot of it, you know, these companies are working with government agencies, with NGOs, where to put their pads and where to put their disturbances. So that's probably the first step of it. The second thing is, I think up until, you know, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, when the greater sage grouse really became, and this is in, you know, the Rocky Mountain states, where the sage grouse became the species of concern for endangered species listing, reclamation had typically been to control erosion and, you know, to prevent weeds. Now it's, I think, moving towards reclaiming or restoring wildlife habitat. Companies definitely, when they are siting their locations, minimizing their soil disturbances, handling soil properly are huge steps. Working with someone to help tailor their seed mixes rather than just, you know, call a seed company and get the Reclamation 101 mix. Putting a little bit of effort in the upfront there can go a long way, not only in cost savings, but in output and, yeah, in providing benefits to wildlife and other ecosystem services. So there's a lot there. One of the things that I've gotten really into is that monitoring, and developed ways to monitor these sites that were with handheld devices, typically up about 10 times faster than traditional techniques, and providing really good spatial information. In 2020, I started doing stuff with drones. Actually, in 2018 and 2019, I published the first paper to look at how to use drones to monitor reclamation in 2020. Where we're about 40 to 45 times faster than traditional methods. Why does that become proactive? It is because it's actually giving these companies a fast way to capture information out in the field. And then I've pioneered the use of spatially explicit dashboards for all of this stuff, so these companies can get either real time, close to real time, or much more rapid reports and decision-making tools than they've previously gotten. With that, for example, one of the companies out in Wyoming is saving on an annual basis, about $135,000 to $150,000 a year, just in making better decisions on where and when to spray herbicide. That kind of all leads to a domino effect here. Saving money, reducing your herbicide spray, but you're also making better decisions as to where to spray it. In turn, reducing the amount of chemicals you're putting out, you know, probably having direct benefits to pollinators and other species that wouldn't chemicals, and getting, much more better results from the reclamation and restoration. So I guess and one of them that would be looking at the bigger picture, and that's starting with where to place a pad and develop.
All right. Talk to me like I'm a CEO. Talk to me like I'm a decision maker. I'm a legislative body member, a politician, a nonprofit in charge of help and reclamation, you know, those types. Why is it that you are bringing a solution to the table, so to speak? And basically, if you had an elevator pitch of 5 floors, 6 floors, a couple minutes you had in an elevator with someone, how would you convince a lobbyist or a state legislature that, you are part of the solution? Because I got to be honest, man, everybody seems to be coming forward with a new idea to help with the environment, that there's a lot of noise out there, if you know what I mean.
Sure. Yeah. So we're in what the United Nations is calling the decade of the decade on ecosystem restoration, which is 2021 to 2030, saying we've got to do a whole lot on restoring systems in this next decade to reverse things like biodiversity loss, to help with climate change and so on and so forth. Oil and gas provide very tangible benefits that we need to use, especially with growing populations. So as more extraction happens, more surface disturbance is occurring. It doesn't make sense for oil and gas to not be part of the solution. And in many instances, I think we can look at oil and gas as analogous to natural disturbances, maybe like a wildfire or things like that, that really kind of can reset or rejuvenate native ecosystems. So I think if we look at it that way and put the right resources in, we can have huge benefits. And because of the amount of surface disturbance there is out there associated with oil and gas, it doesn't make sense not to be part of the solution.
So let's talk a little bit about, what it is that you do for, what's next. So let's say somebody engages with your service. Talk about, the first week, what happens?
Yeah, so I'll work with companies on just kind of assessing what their disturbance looks like, where they're at, where they've been, how I can help them make better decisions, what they've got kind of coming up the pipeline for, what disturbances are going to be done in the next year or so, or where they've been seeing failures, and I'll work with them specifically how to address that. And then from there we'll look at things like what wildlife are utilizing these areas, what kind of weed problems do you have in these areas? How can we work together right from the get-go to minimize our impact? A lot of this stuff, if we can build out a good reclamation plan from the beginning, that's going to save a ton of time and money over the life cycle of maybe a well pad or a pipeline. If we can get it right from day one, we're going to be saving tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars on redoing soil work, redoing or having to apply herbicides and things like that. So oftentimes what I'm looking at is where a company's at and what some of their goals are, what their practices have been, and then working on solving the big problems that they have, and then just streamlining the way their whole operations can work.
Now, you're in Cheyenne, Wyoming. University of Wyoming is where you got your education. This study on the bees and some of that different thing, that was out of Wyoming, correct? That was where you did your work?
Yes. One of the studies that was published in April 2022 was in the Pinedale Anticline gas field, and then a more recent study came from the Jonah field, so just south of Pinedale.
Okay. Now, I was going to ask you now, do you do business in any other states, or is it just primarily Wyoming, or are you looking to branch out into other areas now that the study's done? Talk to me a little bit about your current business and your aspirations.
Yeah, so I actually have a few clients in Colorado Now, oil and gas wise, I'm also talking to some folks in Texas. And then I do other ecology work, working with some pipeline companies out in the Appalachian world, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and a lot of this stuff, I can take just general ecology principles and I think transfer them across the board. Right now I'm focused kind of in the Rocky Mountains. I'm starting to branch out into Appalachia a little bit. And then, I also work with different types of disturbances. I do a lot of work with abandoned mines out in Wyoming and out east, more kind of coastal resilience and coastal habitat restoration type of stuff. So I'm pretty broad. And right now, oil and gas, just Rocky Mountain, but expanding.
What's the takeaway from this interview? What do you want people to take away from this?
Yeah, I'd say if you look at a lot of kind of on the news almost every day, I'll read something about pollinator decline or extinction or the sixth extinction coming, climate change, all this stuff. I think that ecological restoration is going to be an increasingly important tool to combat or to mitigate a lot of these global environmental threats that we hear about all the time. The stuff that I showed in Pinedale and in the Jonah Field, I mean, we found 22 times more insects and pollinators just by doing a good job getting native plants growing back on these disturbed sites. I think if we put some thought into this and do it right, that the oil and gas industry can really do a good job at helping solve some of these environmental problems. And I'm looking forward to working with more and more companies as there's more and more of a push for that to happen.